Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We want to welcome in any new listeners who may be checking us out for the very first time. Happy to have you aboard. For those of you who've been here from the start, you already know the drill. We live and die by this team just like all of you, and we make no apologies for that. I am Jason Kelly. I'm coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. You can find me on Twitter at Color of the Iris. You can find the main account for this podcast at Bastards_Boston. Joining me tonight from the Mile High City of Denver, Colorado, by way of Quincy, Massachusetts, is Andrew Duan. Andrew, how's it going?
Doing good, doing good. You know, just taking some playoff basketball right now. It's watching Giannis just manhandle people like a fullback and, you know, running up the middle. It's kind of funny to see what other teams get away with, but that's kind of all I got going, trying to decompress from a Red Sox series loss and a couple other Boston sports losses the last couple of days.
Yeah, there's certainly no shortage of sports going on right now. It's just a jam-packed schedule all around. Also joining me tonight from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Pretty good. Enjoying the South. It's starting to get pretty consistently in the upper 70s, 80s now, and we're getting the daily thunderstorms and all that fun stuff down here. I haven't swam in the ocean yet, but I think the first time I did it last year, which was really my first season, was the last week of April, which is right now. The water was 70 degrees, which is, you know, compared to New England, you don't go into shock right away when you dive into it. And then basically from June on gets like bathwater. So going to start enjoying the ocean, especially on these Red Sox off days. I think we got two more Thursdays off, don't we, in the month of May? I think
sounds right.
Finally, yeah. And that's lots of bullpen talk in the last episode, so perhaps that will maybe ease that up a little bit. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm jealous. We can't start swimming in any waters up here until like late June, July. People can finally put their pools up, and hopefully it's not too cold when you get in there.
I'm not brave enough to swim in the lakes and the rivers because there are gators down here, and I've seen some. So it's only ocean for me at this point.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. I wouldn't step foot in any of those either.
And swimming pools are essentially toilets to me if kids are around. So I just, those are ruined for me.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you.
I'm airing it all out.
Yeah, no, those can get gross. Believe me, living in Florida for as long as I did. Yeah, some of those swimming pools, you don't feel great coming out of them.
Yeah, exactly.
No. So we're doing another roundtable episode for you guys. We're going to do a little bit of Red Sox talk. We've got some league-wide stuff to get into as well. We're going to start with the Brian Baio demotion. Back down to Worcester he goes after just a couple of starts. Coming back from the injury. His first two starts back, not great. Got lit up a little bit. But it was still kind of a shock, I think, to a lot of Red Sox fans to see that he had been demoted to Worcester, particularly since, you know, he's one of the young studs in, you know, of their pitching program that they're really trying to promote, that they're really trying to get something out of. You know, everyone looked at him, Houck, and Whitlock as sort of the next guys to take over that rotation. And Baio gets sent down, and, you know, there's reports that it's not going to be for very long and that it's just sort of a quick reset and he'll be back up soon. But he made some comments that sort of suggested, you know, he wasn't happy about it, which is natural. He's, you know, he wants to be in the majors. But he basically said he doesn't feel like his development will get any better at the minor league level. He feels that his development is only going to happen at the major league level. So he's obviously bummed out about it. A lot of Red Sox fans are bummed out about it. Terry, what was your reaction to his demotion and sort of how they're handling Brian Baio so far early on.
I was pretty surprised. I mean, it feels like we've had to get used to almost daily roster moves, you know, for a number of reasons, nothing super major, but him being, you know, a move that took place last week definitely surprised me. I thought he handled it very well. I mean, he didn't throw a fit or any type of, you know, he didn't, you know, any type of tantrum, I guess, as far as we can tell. I think he's right. I think he's kind of outgrown the minor leagues. I think if you look at his first start, which I believe may have been the Angels, compared to his next one, I think that was the Brewers. I could be mistaken, but you did notice, a lot more effectiveness from him. I think he only struck out three, lasted 4 2/3 in the more recent one, gave up 3 earned, but it was still a much better performance. He was mixing his pitches, and I was kind of looking forward to seeing what he could do, in his next start. And for me, what it really comes down to is you look at the rest of the rotation. Would I rather have Brian Baio or Chris Sale start? That's a no-brainer. I'm taking Baio. I don't even know if Chris Sale's a major leaguer anymore. He might be, but you know, it's fair to question it. Do I want Brian Baio or Corey Kluber starting? Same thing. I'm going to take Baio over Kluber every time. He's going to give you length and probably a lot more punch outs. And then I think Baio at this point, I've got a lot more confidence in him than I do even Garrett Whitlock, who may still be a reliever. We might have a much better idea after this Guardian series. If Whitlock gets beat soundly by the Guardians, that's a problem with that anemic offense that they have. So I just think Baio is so much better than most of these guys. I would probably prefer Pivetta over Baio, or at least I would slot him a little bit higher on the depth chart, and I would certainly put Houck over him right now, but I want Baio pitching, you know, with the major league club at this point. And he's fun to watch. He's fun to watch.
He is definitely fun to watch. I mean, he's definitely got a little bit of an attitude up there on the mound, which is cool to see. So Andrew, what are your thoughts on Baio?
Well, I don't think it was a performance thing. I think it was strictly a numbers thing. You roll with a 6-man rotation, your bullpen's thin. You only have a certain amount of pitchers you can have on the roster on your 26. And, he was the last guy to pitch, so you had to send him down. They needed to get another arm up and ready, quite frankly, and that was Bernardino. And he actually looked pretty solid today. I don't think it's a long-term thing for Baio, but you're not going to send anyone else down, you know. Whitlock's not going to get sent down. There was really no need to send him down, especially timing-wise. You'd be going on a, short rest for Baio if you sent Whitlock down. Can't send Kluber down. He can't send Sale down. Can't move either to a bullpen spot. So he'll be back up quickly. I'm not too worried about it. You know, there's a certain amount of times you can option a guy nowadays after that 2021 season where we saw Tanner Houck, kind of build up, as many Uber points as he possibly could when he was going down after every start, then coming back up the next day. But yeah, this will be temporary for Baio. He's got to figure a couple things out. What I saw out of some of his performances was that he was going well, and then there was a stoppage or something that would throw him off. It happened twice. The first game he pitched, he should have had a strikeout against the Angels and they blew it. And then the Angels had a few hits and put a few runs up against him. The other day he was working great. And then the umpire jumps out in front of the plate and says, slow it down. And he's like, you have to make eye contact with the batter. And I thought he was, I thought he was working at a great pace. You know, if we're going to tell everyone they've got to hurry up and then this happens, I thought it threw off his rhythm completely. I didn't think he really recovered from it. He'll be fine in the long run. It's not the worst thing to take some miles off his arm after that injury scare we had earlier in the season and then or early in spring training, then obviously missing all of spring training. So he'll be fine. I have zero concerns with him long-term. I'd still hell, I'd still love to work something out, long-term deal for him, something like kind of like what they did with Whitlock. So yeah, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, certainly you hope it is just that it's just a numbers thing and they'll have him back up there pretty quickly. I do agree. He does seem to have, as much as like when he's going well, he does have that little bit of Pedro sort of like attitude about him where like you can tell he's feeling it, but he doesn't have the Tanner Houck thing where as if things start to fall apart a little bit, he, you know, he's able to stand his ground and not get rattled. He doesn't quite seem to have that. He does get rattled a little bit, gets out of his rhythm a little bit, and then it all just kind of goes downhill. So I don't think that's something, you know, he'll sort out in the minors. I think it's just something he's got to sort out with more starts and more experience. But you've got to get this kid going. And if, you know, if it's just a temporary send down and they feel like he can work out a few things, come back even better, that's great, because you need him, Houck, and Whitlock to all take steps forward this year. And so far, Houck has. Whitlock, it's like one step forward, another step back. We'll see how he does going forward. I voiced my opinion on him. I'm still not sold. I think he still would be better in the bullpen. We'll see. But, you know, the way that Whitlock goes is going to be very important to see, you know, does Brian Baio end up just taking his spot and Whitlock goes back to the pen? Who knows? That could be a possibility. So hopefully it is just a quick turnaround, because I do still think he's going to be one of your future big-time pitchers for this team.
Just real quick, I mean, a couple observations here. He can't be called up for 15 more days, so that's up to two more starts. You're not having him. So that's where I kind of have a bigger problem with it here. So now you might be getting some more automatic losses here from some of those guys I mentioned. That's number one. Number two, we didn't even use Cutter Crawford that whole series. Send him down. I'd much rather have Baio up here with the big club. And if he's got the confidence, he think he can figure it out, I'd let him try it for another start or two.
Yeah, I don't love a six-man rotation for the Red Sox. Their bullpen is so beat up. And it's as much as I don't think Bernardino is any great shakes. And, you know, I want Baio back up here too. And yeah, it was a little weird. Cutter Crawford did not get used in the Baltimore series. I thought that was odd as well. Maybe they're trying to save his arm. I mean, he's another young arm that they don't want to burn out. You know, our last episode, we talked about some of these bullpen arms that the usage is already pretty high for the month of April. Guys like Schreiber and guys like, you know, Brazier, not that we care too much about him, but they are using them a lot. And so maybe Cora's just trying to be extra careful with a guy like Cutter Crawford, like Josh Winkowski. He doesn't want to use them too much because he knows that those guys are going to be really valuable down the road. So I want Baio up here. I want him starting regularly, even if he struggles a little bit. But the flip side of that is six-man rotation, your bullpen is even thinner than it already is. I'd be more willing to entertain it if, like, Chris Martin was healthy and Jolly Rodriguez was healthy and you kind of had those guys back in the fold. But right now you don't. So it's a numbers thing. It sucks, but I do understand the reasoning behind it. I just hope that, you know, they don't do it again and again, and that, you know, he comes back up, has a few more bad starts, they send him right back down. To me, that's how you screw up a kid's confidence.
Before you move it on, just out of curiosity, who is the ace of the Red Sox right now, if you had to say it?
Tanner Houck.
That's it. It is.
I mean, right now, Tanner Houck's your best pitcher.
A guy some people aren't even confident is a starting pitcher is your ace right now.
Yep. And yeah, I put him in the same category as Whitlock. I'm not 100% sold on Tanner Houck as a starter, because he may go out his next start and get torched and only make it three innings. And I'll sit there and go, well, maybe he belongs back in the bullpen. Maybe it was all just a mirage and he had a couple of good starts and it's not the real thing. I hope I'm wrong, because I would love to see Tanner Houck blossom as a starter. That's good news all around. And so far he is. But yeah, I'm not 100% sold yet. No.
If that fourth inning isn't a catastrophe today, I mean, there's no questioning it. And I don't know if the Red Sox still go on to win the game, but his numbers look a lot better. And I think the Red Sox had won every previous Tanner Houck start. That was a win. So, yeah, to me, he's, you know, easily the ace. Andrew, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, not really. I mean, I think everyone's shaking some things out. The Corey Kluber start was very encouraging the other day. Things are just going to – everything has a way of kind of working itself out. Like, people are like, oh, what are we going to do when everyone's healthy? It's like, let's see everyone get healthy first. So I'm not too concerned. I think they'll figure, you know, their different roles out at this point. I'm not ready to commit to anyone being the ace of the staff.
But it's just – I mean, the fact we don't have one really, but – I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully it continues this way for Houck and, you know, he continues to build on it and really does turn into that ace, but we'll see. We still got a long way to go. So moving on, we're going to move to the National League Central and we're going to talk about the, as of this recording, the first place Pittsburgh Pirates and the contract extension that they just gave to outfielder Brian Reynolds. This is a guy who was a hot commodity on the trade market last year and in the offseason. The Pirates gave him an insulting contract offer early in the offseason that he did not take. And everyone after that happened, I think it was like a 5 over 70, something like that. It was really bad. Everyone was convinced he was going to be traded after that. Pirates don't end up trading him. They asked for a lot for him on the open market. Nobody bit. They went back to the drawing board. They went back to the negotiating table and they eventually hammered out a deal, 8 years, $106.75 million for Brian Reynolds. There are no opt-outs in the deal, which I think is pretty significant. And he has a limited trade clause. So Brian Reynolds, probably one of the best 5-tool players in the game, stays with the Pittsburgh Pirates on an 8-year deal. Andrew, what do you think of the contract?
I thought it was pretty fair seeing that, you know, he wasn't a free agent until the 2020 or right after 2025 going into the 2026 season. It's good to see that Pittsburgh, you know, finally nutted up and paid one of their own guys. And that's honestly my fear for what Baltimore might start doing in the next few years. But, you know, instead of watching talent constantly walk out the door, now they have this guy that they're going to build around for years. I mean, I see it out here with, you know, Charlie Blackman's been the long-term Rocky. Honestly, that contract hasn't worked out well, but he's been the face of the franchise. Reynolds, I think, will be able to maintain being a corner outfielder. If he has to be a left fielder for years to come, you know, year three, after year three or four of this, he'll be fine. I'm just happy for the fans. And now that we can put all the trade talk to bed and, you know, feel bad for some of the Yankee fans that, you know, had traded for him about 7 different occasions at this point. So sucks to be Brian Cashman and all the rest of them over there.
Terry, what do you think?
It's interesting because they had these negotiations throughout the winter and then there was the so-called deadline, which is never a real deadline. I mean, is the opening day deadline ever legit under any circumstances? Like,
of course not. No,
I don't think it ever, maybe Mookie Betts. That's the only guy I've ever seen kind of hold to it basically. But, so the deadline passes, but then you get the reports. Okay. They're still talking and the money was kind of worked out, but he wanted an opt-out. That was the thing. And I think that's fair. A guy like Reynolds, if he's going to sign a deal that's, you know, team friendly. Now, first of all, $106 million divided by 8, that's $13.25 million to have a stud outfielder. I mean, I would love to have a guy like Reynolds. I wasn't quite willing to, like, I just slightly tempted would I put Meyer in the deal, but gun to my head, probably I don't make that deal, you know, with a player like that in the package. But they get him on an extremely affordable deal, and he foregoes the opt-out, and he just caves. He caved to Ben Cherington and took this insanely team-friendly deal. I just couldn't believe it. I thought it was going to be Sherrington that would cave and say, okay, here's the opt-out, you know, after year three or four, presumably. And it just didn't happen. So it's cool. I mean, it's a good move for Ben Sherrington. Another thing of note here, so there are only three remaining teams in the history of baseball to never give out a contract north of $100 million. Two of those teams won't surprise you, the Kansas City Royals and the Oakland A's. You know, no shock there. Those are two of the smallest market teams there are. The Chicago White Sox is the third team never to go over $100 million. Isn't that insane for a massive market like that?
Benintendi is their highest one, and I think if you go on social media, I don't, fans are worried that they're never going to give out another high contract after that.
And they're going to have to pretty soon. Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to. Tim Anderson is going to be up soon, and I would imagine if he continues the way he's going, he's going to earn more, or he's going to command more than $100 million. So yeah, a lot of White Sox Twitter is just on fire right now. They are so mad at this team. They're wearing sell the team t-shirts to the ballpark. They're all pretty much saying Tim Anderson's out of here. He's going to be gone. But yeah, it's shocking. I knew the Royals, you know, that made sense. Oakland obviously made sense, but yeah, the White Sox. Wow. And just getting back to Reynolds real quick, he did forego the opt-outs, but I think he also protected himself by keeping it a team-friendly deal, because that's a tradable contract, especially a few years down the road. If Pittsburgh can't put it together, if their young talent doesn't pan out and they just never become a contender, and Reynolds, by the time he's 32, maybe 33, you know, wants to play for a contender, that's a tradable deal. $13 million a year. For, you know, a good outfielder who, you know, hits for power and all that stuff. I mean, that's tradable. So I think he protected himself in that way, that maybe by not asking for the richest contract, sure, he foregoes the opt-outs, but if in a couple of years the Pirates are going backwards again, then he can demand a trade and just say, get me out of here. And I think it could happen.
Real quick, though, I mean, the Pirates are like the third or fourth best team in baseball. And it seems like every year there is a team that gets off to a hot start and you're like, well, you know, give it a month, they'll come down to earth. And perhaps the Pirates do, but I don't think it's entirely a fluke. Like, they have a pretty good pitching staff right now. They've got some young pitchers on that staff that are pretty serviceable. And if it weren't for the fact that O'Neill Cruz went down, I would be supremely confident. Well, I shouldn't say supremely confident, but I'd be increasingly confident that this could be a team that competes for the third wild card. That the National League isn't as deep as the American League, but Mitch Keller right now pitching, he's just shy of 30 innings. 3.64 ERA. Johan Oviedo, who we saw in the Red Sox series, a 3.03 ERA. Again, just a hair under 30 innings. Rowanzi Contreras, you know, a 3.58 ERA right now, just under 30 innings. They've got some pitchers on their staff, and even if this isn't the year, it's coming. They're gonna be here soon, and I think Ben Sherrington's doing a very good job. And if they can just add some offense here, that's gonna be a team to be reckoned with. And they have one of the best closers in the league. We were talking about that off air before we come on, David Bednar. So I'm just saying.
Well, and when you look at their top prospects, a lot of them are due up. Like, or expected to be in the majors within the next 2 to 3 years. I mean, it's not like they've got guys who are 17, 18 years old that are still, you know, 4 or 5 years away. Their prospects are on the way soon. They've got, you know, Henry Davis. I know he's struggling a little bit so far in the minors, but he's supposed to be their Adley Rutschman. Like, he's supposed to be the next, you know, generational catcher to come up for them. They've got offense, you know, within their top 10 prospects that could be up, you know, by the trade or by the All-Star break. So like you said, all they have to do is add some offense. They could just add it from within, just start calling guys up. And yeah, they could definitely be a force. They've always had good young talent. They just have never had pitching. Pitching's always been the issue there. That their rotations in years past have been kind of a joke, apart from, you know, guys like Jameson Taillon. They gave up on Gerrit Cole pretty quickly, but like now they're finally starting to redevelop that pitching program. I think that's a big part of their success.
Yeah, they've traded all. I mean, you look at the Chris Archer deal that they did with Tampa, and you know, they got nothing in return for Gerrit Cole. They got nothing in return for you know, in that Tampa deal. The Yankees deal, they got Roazney Contreras, and Smith Njigba, whichever one fought Winkowski, drawing a blank on his first name. But yeah, it's kind of funny to see what this team could be. And, you know, if they if they didn't have to worry about signability and they, you know, didn't go with Henry Davis for the little discount and picked up Marcelo Meyer or Jordan Lawler, how much different, you know, their outlook would be right now.
I think the Cole and Glasnow deals were pre-Sherrington. The Gerrit Cole one definitely was.
Oh, I was just saying, as an organization, yeah. Like, there's been a lot of mistakes, and hopefully this, for their fans, this, you know, their willingness to do a long-term deal marks the end of it.
Okay. Yeah. And just one other observation from me. They've got a couple of interesting guys on that team, you know, that are serving as good leaders. One of them is McCutchen coming back. I mean, that's a great story. And he's not even like completely washed either. You know, he's a very serviceable player and can certainly have a positive impact on, you know, a lot of the younger guys. And then a guy I love immensely, and he could have been a fit for the Red Sox at various points, is Carlos Santana, who's been around forever. He's hitting 261 right now, which I think is actually a little high for him, but he's always been a very high on base guy. He's got a 340 OBP, and I forget which team he was on when he did it. It might have been Seattle, but don't quote me to that. When the Fortnite thing was all the rage and we went through our controversy with David Price, I mean, a lot of the young players across the league were playing it, and Santana got so fed up with it in the clubhouse, he took a baseball bat to the TV and just to get the kids, you know, focused back on baseball. And he was a big part of that Cleveland team that went to extra innings into game 7 of the 2016 World Series. So good guy to have around with McCutchen. I mean, this could be a Cinderella run. It's too early to say for sure, but it's a fun team to keep an eye on right now. And Cruz will be back, you know, at some point, probably about halfway into the season.
Yeah, they're a blast to keep an eye on and to watch right now. And you brought up the point of the National League. I mean, I think the National League, largely outside of the powers that we know, is kind of dog food. I mean, it's not a very good competitive league. So for the Pirates to kind of come out of that and be a surprise story, they could sustain it. I mean, they could beat up on some of those teams in the National League and threaten to be a wild card. So it's a fun ride. I hope they keep it coming, because that fan base deserves to have a team to root for. It's been some miserable decades in Pittsburgh. So I'm happy for their fans, because I think that's a good fan base. It's a, you know, nice ballpark. They've got a good history. Be nice to see that team get back on the map. So we'll see if they can keep it going. Shifting now from the NL Central, we're going to go to the National League West. Madison Bumgarner has been designated for assignment by the Arizona Diamondbacks. Another kind of surprising team in the National League, by the way. They're actually playing some pretty good baseball. But Bumgarner,
my upset special, by the way, for the third wild card.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you might be right. I mean, they're looking pretty good so far, and they obviously don't feel the need to keep Madison Bumgarner around. He's been awful so far this year. 0-3 with an ERA over 10. obviously, we all know what Bumgarner did with the Giants. You know, three-time World Series champ. He was a World Series MVP, NLCS MVP, just one of the absolute heroes of that sort of dynasty run that the Giants went on. But ever since going to Arizona, hasn't worked out. There was the, you know, I think it was the offseason that he signed there. Got into an accident on his ATV, completely screwed up his shoulder and you know, his hips as well or something like that. So he was injured for a good portion of the first year of that contract. And then he gets back on the mound and he's supposedly healthy and he just doesn't seem to have it anymore. His stuff just doesn't look good. And I also thought it was classic Madison Bumgarner that his last start before he got DFA'd, he was pitching against the Cardinals and he was barking back and forth with Wilson Contreras, just, you know, being classic hardo Bumgarner while he was getting torched. And then he gets DFA'd after the game. So pretty classic for him. But Terry, what are your thoughts on Bumgarner and what's next for him? And if this is it for him, how do we look at his career in general?
Well, it could be. He might get a minor league deal on a team that's desperate and thinks they can maybe salvage something out of him. He's only 33 years old. That's the crazy thing. He's younger than Chris Sale, who I'm starting to question. And it's crazy how basically at the turn of this decade, he just fell off. He fell off, and you were starting to see it a little bit with the Giants. Let me get his numbers up. 20, well, actually, I guess he wasn't terrible in 2019. That was his walk year. So 390 ERA. I want to say that he just hadn't been great the last couple of years in San Francisco. And then you pointed out he, you know, had some off-season stuff where he's messing around, I guess, on his dirt bike. And I guess he would sneak off to rodeos. Did you guys hear that? Like riding bulls. And maybe that was even what could have happened and not the dirt bike. But yeah, so it just didn't work out with Arizona. It seems like Arizona, every fifth year, they have a shocking starting pitching move. You know, it was Greinke before him, and that actually worked out okay, and they managed to trade him while he still had value. But then they signed Bumgarner, and it was kind of a head-scratcher, you know, especially to stay in that division that was so familiar with him, that was so loaded, you know, with, you know, other stack teams. And yeah, so I don't know where he ends up, but I will say this. I think he is a Hall of Famer. I mean, just based on his starting pitching in the playoffs, it's just phenomenal. His career numbers actually outside of the playoffs, I mean, 347, not gonna blow you away. I mean, I think you had the one guy from the Twins there get in on the Veterans Committee, Jack Morris. Kurt Schilling is right around there, and I think we would all agree he'd be in if it weren't for his mouth. You know, he's a borderline Hall of Famer as far as his regular season stats, but he won three rings. He was a huge part of those three World Series runs, and he's got 102 innings in the playoffs. That's like a full season for like a Nathan Eovaldi type guy. That's a lot of playoff innings. 211 earned run average throughout that entire run. And, you know, 2010, you know, just 20 years old that year, pitching in the World Series. In fact, that was against the Texas Rangers, and he made one start. Pitched eight scoreless innings, 20 years old in the World Series. Just unbelievable. And, you know, he was pitching out of the bullpen in 2014. He came out in relief. I remember watching that World Series. It was against the Royals, and I wanted the Royals to win so bad because it was just such a cool story. And they did end up winning it the following year. But you know, I told my dad, I said, if Bumgarner comes in with a lead, it's over. You know, Giants are going to win it again for the third time. So, great career. I'd be shocked if it's over at age 33. I mean, it is by all intents and purposes over, I think. I don't think he'll salvage it, but someone could take a chance on him.
Andrew, what do you think? Hall of Famer, yes or no?
Right now, no. It depends on where the voting goes. And then, you know, with the next generation of eligible voters comes in and kind of gets rid of the old crowd that's kind of been the gatekeepers. But if you have a guy like Andy Pettit that hasn't gotten in, I mean, he was a postseason baller like no other, and probably won over 225 games. I don't have it in front of me. I should have pulled it up. But if you guys got guys like that not in the Hall of Fame, it's going to be hard to put Bumgarner in. But Bumgarner, in 36 innings in the World Series, allowed one run. That's ridiculous. I don't think anyone – he's probably the greatest World Series pitcher of all time. I don't think there's any debating that. If you pick one person with their resume in World Series games, it's going to be him. The issue with him is that, you know, he threw so many goddamn innings. I think he said he was younger than Chris Sale, but like, if he's clearly thrown more innings than Chris Sale. Chris Sale is sitting at 1,700 right now. Madison Bumgarner, not including playoffs, 2,200. So that's a lot of wear and tear. If he's throwing 220 innings a year and then pitching in well into October, you know, three starts each time, going 6-7 innings, and then you have an abbreviated offseason, you're coming back, you're doing it again, another abbreviated offseason. There's a lot of miles on there. So I don't think he is going to ever rebound. I think he'll get a stint. We saw – what's his name? Who's that? God damn, I'm drawing a blank. I want to call him, say Lance Lynn, but it's clearly not Lance Lynn, but he's going in the same territory. Pitcher of White Sox last year, DFA'd a couple different times. He's a Cy Young candidate.
Oh, yeah. Dallas Keuchel.
Yes, Keuchel.
Dallas Keuchel, yeah.
We saw him, I think actually was in Arizona too, bounce around. I don't think Madison Bumgarner is probably going to be a guy that wants to do that and have his ego bruised that much, because we've seen, you know, what happens when guys hit a home run off him. He loses his crap. So I think this is the end of the road for him. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Hell of a legacy. You know, it almost sucks he didn't retire, and you could have seen him and Buster Posey go into air. Him, you know, be on the same ballot and have the same retirement ceremonies with the Giants. He has his place in history. I just don't think it's going to be Cooperstown, is I guess my long-winded way of saying it. I just don't think today's voters are there for it. If he hangs around on the ballot for 7 years, maybe, but it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, he may need some help to get into the Hall of Fame. He may have to, like you said, be on the ballot for several years before he gets in. My gut tells me he's not a Hall of Famer. I think he may be the greatest postseason pitcher of all time, but to me, it's not enough. He never won a Cy Young. You know, 134 career wins, but also 124 career losses. And wins and losses is tough for pitchers. Like, does that stat really matter? It's more about the team. I get that, but I don't know. I never looked at him as the best pitcher of his time. And to me, to get into the Hall of Fame, you have to be at one point or another the best player at your position. I just don't think Bumgarner was ever that. I always thought he was really good. He was, you know, probably a top 10 guy at his peak. You know, made the All-Star team a couple of times, but again, it never won a Cy Young. To me, that's telling. I think the closest he ever finished was fourth. So it's not like he even had a year where he was a runner up and you could argue maybe he should have won it. No, he never had that. So the postseason stuff is incredible. I can't take that away from him, but I just think everything else, he was just really, really good, not great. And that's kind of where I land. So to me, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I do think this may be it for him. I don't know where his stuff really plays. I don't think any team is going to look at him and go, yeah, no, this guy can make 20, 25 starts for us and be, you know, worthwhile. I don't see it. So I'd be very surprised if someone actually tries to pick him up.
One of the things I'm looking at is strikeouts, and he's got just over 2,000, I think. Yeah, 2,070. And, I mean, there's only 37 pitchers in the Hall of Fame that have more than he does in that category. You know, I think his earned run average is probably, you know, a little high. But I don't know. I think it's borderline. I think he's going to stay on the ballot. It's still 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I think he's got a shot. And that postseason record, man, I mean, I was going to go over this anyway, but in this century, going back to 2000, there's only two other pitchers that have three rings. Do you guys know who those are?
Oof. Only two?
Yeah, there's only two others. Oh, does he? He might. Maybe I forgot him. Was he on the 2014 team?
I think so, right?
If he was, okay. All right, so there's two more. There's Lincecum and then two more. For some reason, I thought Bumgarner was the only one on all three of those Giants teams.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank.
They both pitched for the Red Sox.
John Lester. Yeah, Lester.
Yeah, Lester, okay.
He's
Lester,
one. And Lackey.
Oh, shit. No. I'm just bombing. Yeah, you're correct on Lackey.
He had the Angels. He had the Red Sox. Did he get another one?
Yeah, he got the Cubs. He was on that Cubs team.
Was on the team.
All right, yeah. So I did a bad job preparing for this. So
I got those names actually.
So I totally botched Lackey and Lincecum, but John Lester, two with the Red Sox, one with the Cubs. Kurt Schilling, one with the one with the Diamondbacks, two with the Red Sox. Diamondbacks was 2001, so that's the century. So Bumgarner is in pretty good company here. I feel like. You know, he's tied for the most in this century. So just something to consider. You know, I could be wrong, and I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm not going to cry if he doesn't get in or whatever, but
I'll admit I have a little bit of a dog in the fight. Cause I was a big Tim Lincecum advocate. I know I was on, you know, an island by myself on that one. He didn't even get the minimum votes to stay on the ballot, but back-to-back Cy Young winner and World Series champ. I don't know, to me, even though his career was much shorter, I always liked Lincecum as a Hall of Famer better than Bumgarner. So, but I agree. I think Bumgarner, just because of the postseason stuff, he's going to get the minimum votes to stay on. It's just a matter of will the amount of time on the ballot help him? And maybe that's what he needs. Maybe that'll get him in. So,
yeah, maybe.
Any other final thoughts on any of that? All right. Well, we will be back with you guys. So the Weekend Crew's got you next. They'll be recapping the Guardian series. And then the three of us will be back for our next midweek recap of the Blue Jay series. The first series of May, kicking off with what could be a tough one. So that's a tough four-game series, a very important one as well.
You guys' streak on the midweek isn't looking good for a W. No. But we basically do count. It's a four-game series, so we always treat typically a split as a win. So we'll see if they can at least do that.
Yeah, that would be nice if they could at least do that for us. That would be very helpful. So yeah, look out for all of that. And as always, check us out on Twitter and the YouTube channel. We're always got some good stuff going up on there. Until next time, take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.